pleasure to be here today. Tim's talk provides an excellent segue for what I wanted to talk about today, which is really a problem of journal access for those who are not at the University of Washington, the people that show up and in fact get turned away because of the licenses they're assigned. People who want to have access to the scientific literature, but for a variety of reasons, they cannot afford it. So I've titled my talk today, I'm going to talk about information overload and underload. The focus is mostly on biotechnology companies, a lot of those here in the Seattle area, but there are other groups that it also affects, and I'm going to discuss that as well. So I just get everybody on the same page, or do a little visualization. This is what overload looks like, and this is underload. If we look at information, this is what overload looks like. We're all familiar that we can see the graphs here for how the number of journals have increased tremendously. And of course, we have other things to read today with blogs and all that. And that's what information underload looks like, when in fact you can't afford access to the scientific literature. So here's a cartoon from Science. I'm not going to take the time to go through this. This was actually just published last month and shows you the tremendous growth in journals. We all know that there's a lot of information out there, and the more information that's out there, the greater difficulty even people who have access to that information have in processing it and reading it and all that kind of stuff. But again, I'm really here to talk about a question which I actually phrased in an article that I wrote for a blog I do about once a month for the Exconomy website. And here's the question I posed, which is, at a time when there's more and more papers being published, the information overload is a given. Does a lack of access to this information become an equally large problem? So let me give you a definition. What I talk about, what I mean, information underload, that's a situation where an individual lacks access to timely, critical information that they need to optimally do their job. And I came to understand this as a problem when I called a friend of mine at one of our smaller local biotech companies. And by the way, 95% of the local biotech companies fall into that smaller category. And I asked him about, hey, did you happen to see that new paper on stem cells? And he said, well, no, I haven't seen it. I'm like, well, you know, why don't you get a talk about it? I said, well, we actually don't have a budget for buying those articles. And in the bigger picture, I'm just going to digress here for a minute. For those of you who don't follow the drug discovery and pharmaceutical industry, there's been a real trend over the last few years where big pharma companies, the ones who put up all those advertisements you see on TV, are actually spending less and less money on basic research. They have essentially decided that they're going to be getting out of that for various reasons. They don't have time to do it today. So they're being more and more dependent on small biotech companies to make these discoveries, which they're going to buy and turn into drugs. But if the small biotechs can't afford access to the scientific literature, well, you can imagine that's going to have a serious impact on our ability to develop new drugs for the future. So, again, what's the problem here? And the major problem is it's a money crunch. Again, if you're here at the University of Washington, you have great access to journals. If you're at a small company, maybe there's only 2 or 5 or 10 or 15 scientists, it's a real problem. Now, many of us grew up in an environment where I always had excellent libraries. I went to graduate school at the University of Wisconsin, and my department library was fantastic, and it was right next door to the medical library. So if I couldn't get it here, I didn't have very far to go. When I moved out here to Seattle, I worked at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center, fabulous library. And when I took a job here in biotechnology at Immunex, we also had an excellent library and librarians who could get you anything that you wanted. But in a lot of places, as I say, it's very problematic with trying to access literature for financial reasons. So literature access is important, especially in the drug discovery area, but I think you recognize this in all fields because of the overlapping nature of disciplines. So if you want to come up with a new cancer treatment, as I've indicated here, you're not just reading about cancer. You've got to read about genetics and biochemistry, and toxicology, computational biology, developmental biology, cell biology, immunology, stem cell biology, and of course, you're going to read oncology journals. And all of this, of course, is on a background where you need to keep up with general industry trends and technical advances that are made in science. There's a lot of stuff that you want to access, but of course, the problem is being able to do so. So what exactly does information underload look like? It means you have no library and no librarians. You've got a very limited access to online information databases. You have a very small number of journal subscriptions. These would not be institutional subscriptions. These would be individual subscriptions that get passed around. And also a very small budget to purchase journal access on an article-by-article basis. I was noticing on one of the posters here that the average academic investigator looks at 271 articles per year. You can imagine if you're going to have to buy those individually at $35 a pop, you're going to blow through your budget, which in many places is measured in a few thousands of dollars at a very rapid rate. So what's the problem then with my articles, one of the final? As I just indicated, they're very expensive. I'm sure many of you have gone to the dreaded paywall, and all of a sudden the thing that you get the link to and you look at and I want to read this, well, it's $30 to $35 a month. And even more frustrating for a lot of us, you can't determine if the information in the article is actually useful until after you pay for it. That's like test driving a car only after you've purchased it, right? I buy a car, then I get to test drive it. It's a really crazy system that we have here. And I have a solution for that, which I'll get to in a little while. But I want to tell you a little more about some of the details of underload. Now, who suffers from information underload? And as Finn just indicated, scientists at small biotech companies, and these are people, of course, who, as we just heard, they're at a significant disadvantage in negotiating these terms with the big publishers because they don't have any eyeballs there that they're going to go ahead and put in front of the computer to look at those things. Lay people who want to research diseases, they have a loved one, you want to find out what's going on, let me look at this particular treatment, and $30 to $35 a month. It's amazingly expensive. Journalists, I imagine, have some problems with getting access to this. You're going to have to pay for it. And these days, of course, there's a lot of people in the DIY movement, amateur scientists who want to do things. Again, they want to get access to the scientific literature, but it is a problem. So how do people access the scientific literature? Well, there's a number of ways of doing it. There's a number of places you can go on the web. There's PubGet, Get It Now, Deep Dive, and ReadCube. These are places, again, where you can buy access to individual articles. A few of them now have changed up the models a little bit. You can actually rent them. You can read an article, but you can't download it, you can't rent it. Some of them have just cloud access. Again, you can look at it on the cloud, but you can't download it, you can't rent it. And your choices here are limited if you have a limited budget. So if you can't afford these options and you don't want to rent something, how are you going to get access to the scientific literature? Well, there's three classic ways. You can beg, you can borrow, and you can skip. Right? So let's see what those look like. So this is begging. I do this a lot. Dear distinguished professor, please send me a PDF reprint of your article that was recently published, and you send off the email, and I have to say, the success rate for doing this, maybe 80%. It's pretty good for recent articles, but many of us in science know that you want to get the articles that were published 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 20 years ago, and try and find those investigators, but forget about it. They don't have PDFs of things anyway. So when you want to get that 20-year-old article from the Journal of Biological Chemistry, once again, $30 to $35. So that's begging. Now, you can borrow it, you can share individual subscriptions, and I picked these three journals here to illustrate one particular point, which again ties into the growth of the journals. 25 years ago, if you read Science, Nature, and Cell, you were pretty much up on most of the big discoveries that were being made in the biological sciences. But these journals have all undergone a biological fission process, right? So science now is just science, right? There's science signaling and there's science translational medicine. Nature, it's all over the place. Nature biotechnology, nature genetics. Cell, used to be just Cell, and now there's still Stem Cell and a bunch of other journals. So there's just lots and lots of information that you want to get. Buying 3 subscriptions isn't going to get it done for you anymore. The other way you can borrow, of course, is go to your local library. I know that you can actually make arrangements for getting access here on a formal basis with the USGA, but you can certainly stop by a library. I actually go to the Fred Hutchinson. The reason I go to Fred Hutchinson is, here's the hint, parking is free there. Very easy. The librarians are nice, and they have really good access, and they're there to buy that access to you. So that's another great resource for those of you who need to borrow that information. The other thing you can do is steal. Tim, I'm sorry, blow away. But people actually do this. Yes, you get your neighbor's access code. We know everybody that has a friend who's a professor here, and you just tap into the UW Medical Library as if you're somebody else. People do this, but of course it's illegal. And we don't want people to do things that are illegal. That's not what we want to promote. Now, we've heard about the dreaded paywall already. We know that articles are locked up in prison by the publishers. And here's some numbers. By my calculations, about 73% of all full-text articles in PubMed are locked up behind a paywall. That represents about 10.4 million articles. So it's not just the occasional thing you can't access. There's a lot of it that you can't get to. And quantitating the effects of information underload. This is difficult. Maybe social scientists could have a way of measuring this. I'm not sure exactly how you do it, but what I can say is I'm pretty sure it's going to result in lower productivity, and in the area that I work in drug discovery, it's going to decrease the likelihood of a drug getting into clinical trials and making it all the way through those, because again, people are missing information, and that can turn out to be a big problem, especially when you invest in billions of dollars to try to come up with some new medicine. So what's the missing piece of the puzzle? I have thought about this. I wrote a couple of editorials for this, one for the Exconomy website, Nature Biotechnology Approach Me, to a follow-up article on that, and thinking about this problem. And then I had an idea for something called iPubSci, which I want to share with you today, which I think would be an excellent solution to this problem. So what is iPubSci? It's envisioned as a melding of PubMed with an iTunes-like interface that would enable you to purchase individual research articles without having to buy the entire journal or having to have a subscription to that journal. In fact, I like this idea so much, I put together a website. You can visit it. I have little cards in the back on the table there that would direct you to iPubSci.com. Anybody here who has not used iTunes? Okay, so it's pretty intuitive, pretty easy to use. So you just imagine doing a PubMed search. You've got an iTunes kind of interface there. You move your cursor over the name of the article. You search by the author. You search by the title. Search by the subject. The articles come up. You put the cursor over it. Up pops the abstract, so you can read that. Okay, that seems like a pretty easy way to go. And let me give you a comparison now of what iTunes would look like versus iPubSci. So we know that, of course, there are payments that have to be made to either perhaps the musical artist, they don't work for free, or a scientist. Now, of course, in iTunes, if you're going to be paying a musical artist, well, you know, that doesn't come cheap. They have very high production costs, and they want to get paid a lot of money. Unlike, of course, the scientist who isn't getting any for writing a journal article. So, obviously, the costs are much higher here. Now, for the music publishers and, of course, the journal publishers, the costs are high in both places. One of the numbers that I've seen, in fact, is that the profit margin, at least for groups like Elsevier, it's 40%. It's enormous. When you think about your local grocery store, that's a 1% profit margin. They're making big money, which is why these journals are so expensive. Production costs Again, I think relatively on publishing are relatively low. Again, versus music, where a lot of times, you know, you bring in the full orchestra, you've got the singer there, everybody's got to get paid, production time. There's a lot of cost associated with that. In terms of the number of items for sale, there's millions in both categories, lots of music, lots of articles. And in terms of other sources of the product, you can get music in a number of different places. I'll talk about that more in a minute. Whereas articles, you're much more limited in where you can get the article. If something is published in Science, you got to get it from Science. You can't get it somewhere else, right? And in terms of potential sales per item, of course, for any piece of music, hit song, you're going to have millions of copies of that. I don't think there are hit articles that get published in journals that would download millions of times, but there will certainly be thousands of those that would be forthcoming. So what are iPub size advantages over iTunes? Again, for many of the articles I've been talking about, there's simply no other affordable way to obtain them. Now, if you want to get Beyonce's latest hit, you know, you can go ahead and get it from iTunes, you can buy it from Amazon. You can go to the get the CD at your local music store. You can go to the Seattle Public Library and check out the CD, listen to it and copy it at home. Maybe you can view the video for her latest hit somewhere on YouTube. But as I pointed out previously, again, if you want to get an article that's published in an academic journal, you either come to a library like this, or you're going to go ahead and buy it from one of these uber expensive kind of downloading sources that I listed before. So I'm going to put up a pricing structure for iPubSci. Okay? It's kind of radical, but just go with it. If it was published in an open access journal, it's in PubMed Central, it's free for you to download. And if it's in a for-profit journal, if it's more than 2 years old, you're going to pay 29 cents for it. If it's less than 2 years old, 49 cents. And if it's less than 6 months old, you're going to pay a whopping $1.29. I think the economics would work out. I'm not an economist, but if the music people can do it, I don't see why the publishing people can't do it. Now, Apple was able to lure large numbers of customers away from free sources like that were illegal file sharing sources, because iTunes made content easy to use, was reasonably priced, and you can download only the exact content that you wanted. In the old days, those of us who grew up had to buy the album, right? Two hits, 10 pieces of filth. Right? Horrible songs. But you wanted to get the thing that you wanted. It's the same thing here. If there's an article that comes out, you know, especially things like Science, right? Maybe I want to see the biology articles there, but no offense to the physical people, but I don't want to read the articles there in astronomy. I don't want to read the articles about geology, and yet I'm forced to buy those when I buy my latest issue of Science. So the concept between both iTunes and iPubSci is based on this idea published by Chris Anderson of something called the long tail. And the long tail works with music, and I think the long tail would easily work with a Science article publisher. It's a good book. I recommend it to you. He also has another book about why the cost of digital stuff is all getting cheaper. It's called Free. It's also a very good book. This is what the long tail looks like. So on the y-axis here, it is the popularity of the particular title, whether it's music or an article that you want to download, a Science article. And this is the number of titles. So in the short tail, which is over here, the head of this is where all the really popular stuff hangs out. And over here, the long tail, right? These are those songs, the really sort of ones that aren't very popular, but you just happen to love that band. And you can go on iTunes and buy them. And the same thing here. Those articles from that Journal of Biological Chemistry in 1978 that has that method that you want to see, through this, it's over here. But you can buy it for 29 cents, or actually it'll be free. So as I say, this concept works in music, and I believe the concept would work for publishing. So who could develop an iPubSci? People say to me, oh, why don't you just go ahead, you're an entrepreneur, set up a company and go ahead and do this. And I thought about that for approximately 30 seconds. I couldn't figure out why Elsevier wanted to sit down across the table from me and negotiate the terms to take the prices down from astronomical to like $1.29. But Apple faced this exact same issue when they came up against Sony Music and talked to them about putting together iTunes. So you're going to need someone who has serious financial resources. This is not an idea for a startup.
And the four likeliest candidates that I was able to think of are Apple, Amazon, who we already know has a strong interest in publishing, Google, and Microsoft.
It's going to have to be somebody who can sit across the table from Wiley, from Elsevier, from Springer, to get them to negotiate the terms to actually go with this model.
And how can you help?
Well, if you have the likeness idea of iPubSci and you'd like to see something like this come to fruition,
I'm going to ask you, if you happen to have any contacts at these companies, go ahead and tell them about the idea.
Refer them to the website.
We actually have a link on the iPubSci Facebook page
you can like this. So if you like the idea, go for it.
And again, share the concept with colleagues
just to help get the word out. It doesn't have to be done the way it's being done now. There is another approach that we can take.
And finally, I just wanted to acknowledge that the concept for iPubSci, it arose out of some brainstorming sessions that I was having with a friend, Molly Bernard. She's a science librarian.
She was at Zymogenetics until they downsized, and then beyond, they downsized. Now she's at
Seattle Genetics. She's an expert on academic publishing and journal acquisition. So we had a lot of very interesting conversations, the way to move things forward, and this concept came out of that.
So with that, I'll be happy to wrap up and to take any of your questions. Thank you.
That's sort of the big difference. But on the other side of the point, the issue is that
again, they're not paying the scientists for these articles. You know, if you want the, you know, the famous musician to like Beyonce, to go ahead, you're going to have to pay her a lot of money. But if you want to publish an article in Nature, Nature's not going to give you a dime to do it. So I think the cost could work out. I'm not an economist, but it seems reasonable that this could be done, and that they're still going to make good profits, just like Sony Music. And EMI still make good profits selling music. They just use a different model for doing it. Yes?
I love this concept. It's really bringing scientific literature to the mainstream. And I also want to make a comment about how, you know, as we were discussing, okay, people might want to buy this one song off an album, the rest of it is crap. Well, back in the old days, old school albums, they were the product. You know, like, look at Pink Floyd. Like, they made an album you listen to start to finish, not just an individual song here and there, like modern albums are. What if you were to create a product like an album? Like, say, if you were interested in looking at the efficacy of a certain nutritional supplement, and then you could put together maybe 10 different articles that very directly all, you know, talk about very basic clinical studies. And I know that people kind of take that together and they write up a review, but the review doesn't have, like, figure 1, 2, and 3 for you to look at. You know, you have to read the review and go back to the original literature and see for yourself, okay, you know, look at the context. But if you were to create something where, you know, maybe you were to take a review and then sell the articles that reference this or some of them.
So, in fact, there is an equivalent within scientific publishing. It is, every now and again, a journal that decides to come out with a special issue that's devoted to one subject, and maybe it's loaded with, you know, 15 reviews from experts just within that. And again, the pricing model here can be adjusted so that if you want that, again, you can get it for a perhaps reduced price as compared to buying each of the articles within it. So something like that should be doable.
Yeah, I think it's a great concept.
Thank you.
Sir, thank you very much.
Thank you.